Lately, I've been using a new product that I really like. It's called Superbeads. It's based on Nobel Prize winning research and the nitric oxide principle. Nitrates are converted to nitric oxide in the body, which is the secret to Superbeads activity. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeads.com. That's 800-738-2198, intelligentbeads.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. Layla Mutin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. We work together on a daily basis. She is a registered dietitian, and she also has earned an advanced master's degree in the field of nutrition, and together we solve patients' problems, and we're about to do that here on the air for you. Reminder, you can send us questions to radioprogram, that's one word, radioprogram@AOL.com, and we will endeavor to answer as many questions as we can each week here on our weekly Q&A session. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good, good. You're getting a little sick of winter, right?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Aren't
I think we turned the corner, though. The spring training has started. Baseball has started.
Right.
So at least
daylight saving time is here.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah.
So at least help is on its way. It's going to take a while. Don't walk around in short sleeves and Bermuda shorts yet.
But not yet.
As much as we may be tempted. Yeah, we can put on the UV lights, the full spectrum lights, and you can walk around in shorts and a Hawaiian shirt inside.
That's it.
And just pretend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretend.
So this week we have some interesting stories. So just share one of them with you. Mm-hmm. There's a case report here of how a teenager in Boston was treated for severe obsessive compulsive disorder by treating her gastrointestinal tract. Okay.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, uh-huh. which is that whole microbiome, gut-brain,
yeah.
Right? The gut-brain connection. And in fact, we talked to him many times before, but he's got a new book. Brain health book, or what is it? Grow Your
Dr.
Brain.
Dr. Perlmutter's book, yeah.
Yeah, the new book. He's got a brand new book. It's coming out. It always got a catchy title, but it's so catchy it eludes me right now. I'll remember it sometime during the podcast.
One
anyway,
of us will come up with it, yep.
Yeah, but he's also got a new medical journal for medical professionals, which is the Gut Brain Journal. Anyway, so the story is a teenager in Boston was treated for a severe obsessive compulsive disorder, as well as attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And an array of digestive problems using probiotics and antibiotics. So here antibiotics had to be used because she had an overgrowth of harmful bacteria. It's probably SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, which I plan to write about. That's an upcoming article for our newsletter. And they eliminated the bad bacteria. They replaced it with good bacteria. And according to the treating physician, quote, after 6 months, Mary's symptoms began to disappear. And by a year, they were gone. Today, 3 years later, Mary is a senior in high school and has no sign of either mental disorder. And
fabulous.
So very, very interesting. Yeah. You know, there is certainly a connection. I mean, we don't want to oversimplify because there are many aspects to anxiety and OCD.
That's true too.
The gut has a very important relationship to overall mental well-being.
Yeah. I mean, you would have to, I think even a good psychiatrist would want to rule out any gut issues in that setting, you know. But more doctors need to ask, what kind of diet are you on? Have you taken any recent antibiotics? So forth and so on. Stress, sleep, all of these things that can alter the microbiome.
And I think I might have shared this with you. I'm sorry, I think I might have shared with you, there was a great article in The Lancet recently that was a call to action for psychiatrists that they really ought to pay attention to nutrition. And one of the quotable quotes from there was that nutrition should take its place in psychiatry As much as nutrition plays a role in endocrinology and in gastroenterology and cardiology, because you
and
know we
neurology,
sure,
and let's name all of them.
Well,
nutrition is everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but I think it's already they understand there's this early relationship between diet and heart disease. I mean, that's I think finally. You know, has been the mainstay of preventive cardiology. Okay, we understand that, but I think psychiatrists all too often ignore signs that there are nutritional issues that complicate psychiatric problems. And, you know, what's interesting is we often get referrals from psychologists and psychiatrists. They say to their patients, look, you know, I can help you, you know, with talk therapy, I can help you with medication, but you really ought to go see a holistic physician and clean up your act, because that's going to help your mental
health.
Absolutely.
That's great advice if they give it, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, I just thought it was interesting. And, you know, there are small victories along the way, as much as sometimes we see press reports that dismay us, that put down vitamins and supplements and, you know, take us back so many years in terms of the age of ignorance of the benefits of natural medicine. More and more there's recognition that some of the things the themes we've been emphasizing here in this program and in our practice are going mainstream, which is gratifying.
Yeah, it is gratifying.
Yay. So what are some of the questions that we have for today?
Yeah, well, this was actually one issue that we had left off last week. It was about chia seeds. And actually, I've got two questions or comments, one from Renee and one from Roseanne.
Wow.
And they're basically saying the same thing. What's going on? I'm reading that chia seeds aren't good for us. I thought chia seeds were an excellent source of omega-3 fats and other nutrients, but I'm seeing that there's some controversy, and someone like even Lauren Cordain says that it's not good food because it has anti-nutrients, which can prevent absorption of minerals. It may promote leaky gut, inflammation, food allergies. What am I supposed to do? And what about flax seeds and hemp seeds then?
Right.
Well,
wow. Okay, so chia is in the crosshairs here.
Yeah.
So, you know, you probably did a little research on this.
Yes.
So what did you come up with? Because Lauren Cordain has some views on this.
Yeah, Lauren Cordain has some views on this. And listen, you know, there are a lot of foods with anti-nutrients in them.
Yep.
Plants also are naturally selected to protect themselves.
Seeds.
And therefore, I mean, that's a whole topic.
Right.
That really is a whole topic, and we could talk about lectins
right.
and things like that, and phytates, phytic acid, which can prevent the absorption of some minerals and things like that. But
protease inhibitors, you know, things that prevent digestion, because seeds get eaten by animals, and that's the way that they're basically pooped out, you know, on another side of the mountain. That's the way seeds achieve mobility, is that they are resistant to digestion. Animals eat them but don't digest them completely, and then they are excreted in the stool, and that's, you know, they don't have legs to walk from one place to the other, but that's how they get distributed
right.
across the environment. So
well,
they resist digestion.
That's why they say, like, in the case of flax seeds, that they should always be milled.
And that's what I do.
Should always, yeah.
I always have a choice. I go to the health food store and I see the whole flax seeds, and I go, no, you know, I want the ground flax meal. It's preferable.
Yeah. The same might be for chia, but there is actually a caveat with chia seeds, and because chia seeds actually have the ability to absorb up to 27 times their weight in water.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone with swallowing problems or esophageal restrictors, they need to be careful.
Okay, because they have a sponge-like effect. They have a sponge-like effect.
It's a sponge-like effect. So
right.
what you want to do is soak them in some kind of liquid before actually eating them, if you're going to eat them.
And then you might get a chia pet.
Yeah, that's where it originated.
It's like Abraham Lincoln.
You might get a chia pet in your esophagus. Oh,
right,
no.
Right.
That's
no.
an emergency.
Make sure you chew the chia seeds, otherwise, you know, you'll have a chia pet in your esophagus. No, they so, but sprouting actually renders them more digestible too. Knowing Lauren Cordain, he has some issues with certain popular foods. For example, he believes that for certain people, chilies and pepper family foods can be irritants. And, you know, that's the case for a certain percentage of people. But I have to say that for the vast majority of people, not. And,
right.
You know, his notion is that some of these foods are not really paleo. They've been introduced recently in human evolution, but humans have a good way of adapting to many ancient foods. And if they're prepared properly, they can be handled. Now, there is a product called Chia Omega that's made by Essential Formulas, the same company that makes Dr. Ahira's probiotic. And it's a vegetarian option for people who don't want to take fish oil for ethical reasons or because they're allergic to fish. They can take Chia Omega, which has a high content of omega-3. So that's one of the uses of chia. And I don't think that that's likely to carry a problem. I mean, I just don't want people to become phobic about chia the way that some people are phobic about soy. I think it's some people have problems with soy, but soy is an acceptable food in moderation for a lot of people.
For a lot of people, that's true. That's true. So in moderation, Roseanne and Renee. Okay.
One might say we have a patient with severe digestive problems, or you know, ulcerative colitis or something. We might say chia seeds, not
a
big
great idea.
By the way, it just reminds me that and I think I shared this story with you this week because we share and share alike articles, and we're always looking for ways to improve our care of patients. But there's a new story about emulsifiers, things like carboxymethylcellulose and polysorbate 80. These are often added to processed foods to give them mouthfeel and also to help things like Ready Whip not devolve into a pile of white stuff and oil on the side. You know, the emulsifiers kind of keep it solid. And they actually have been shown to disrupt the flora in the gastrointestinal tract, worsening the risk of inflammatory bowel disease and impeding metabolism, causing metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance in the gut. So, it just once again underscores our message, which is, don't eat chemicalized food. Look for food additives. Try to make foods, de novo. Get really clean foods that don't have additives. Even health foods sometimes have these types of additives.
Yeah, absolutely. And, on that note, we do have another question here, speaking of additives and things like that. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Can you please explain the drawbacks or possible benefits of using caramel coloring and or carrageenan?
Okay.
I've noticed these in food products and supplements. Now, carrageenan, it's a common food additive. It comes from red seaweed. But animal studies have repeatedly shown that food-grade carrageenan causes GI inflammation and higher rates of intestinal lesions, ulcerations, possibly malignant tumors. It's theorized that the chemical structure of the carrageenan, which is not found in other seaweeds and gums, causes this problem, and it may trigger an immune reaction.
Right.
Which leads to the inflammation and so forth. Now, caramel color, this is a known carcinogen.
Yeah.
You'll find caramel color in your can of Coca-Cola. You'll find it in any kind of colored processed food product. You may find it in some kind of box of chocolate-covered chips or some kind of thing like that. So caramel color is in a lot of places.
Isn't it an age, an advanced glycosylation end product? It's also, and that is something
it's burnt
that...
burnt sugar, almost.
Burnt sugar, right.
You want to call it a burnt sugar.
Now, once again, I got to temper this by saying that there may be tiny amounts of carrageenan in certain foods. And we know that, for example, seaweed has carrageenan in it. And some people can eat seaweed and they're okay. In fact, it's the main staple of the Japanese diet. I think it's a matter of moderation. I also think it's a matter of what's the condition of your gastrointestinal tract. For patients who have ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, severe irritable bowel syndrome, we'll say zero tolerance. Just absolutely eradicate that. On the other hand, I would say that for some people, moderate amounts of this probably aren't going to, amount to 90% likelihood of gastrointestinal cancer or colitis.
That's true. And a lot of people aren't bothered at all by it, and it's just fine.
Yeah.
Carrageenan is used to replace that mouthfeel when you remove fat from certain foods.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, again, I don't want carrageenan to become the new MSG or, you know, right. like zero tolerance kind of thing.
Well, you know, it's in enough places. It's in a lot of dairy products. It's in that container of half and half, unless you're getting organic half and half, to put in coffee or something like
does
that.
Does almond milk contain carrageenan sometimes? Does almond milk contain carrageenan sometimes?
I've not seen it, but I think it might depend. It depends on the brand.
What about
in a lot of ice creams.
What about Silk? You know, Silk is that
soy milk.
Yeah, but it's that.
I haven't looked at a container of Silk recently.
Okay, I'm concerned about things that have sort of a creamy texture that may be induced by some quote natural ingredient that is suspect. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So we have another question here. Dr. Hoffman, anything that can be done about essential tremor?
That's a tough one. Essential tremor is different than the kind of tremor you get in Parkinson's disease, although occasionally a patient will jump the diagnosis from essential tremor to Parkinson's. Essential tremor is actually a more of a hereditary problem that can occur earlier in life, and it's basically the shakes. And, you know, gunslingers were familiar with the shakes because you ever notice, you know, those movies where they have, like, the showdown at OK Corral or High Noon? Why do the gunslingers always go to the saloon before they go to the, you know, I mean, you would think that in order...
Have a shot of whiskey?
Right. You would think that if you want to, like, be like, a really good shot, you wouldn't go to the bar first. I mean, like, if I want to, you know, have a terrific, you know, athletic performance, I don't, like, do a couple of shots. But actually, there's something to it, is that if you have essential tremor, one of the ways to diagnose it is you ask a patient, do your shakes resolve a little bit with alcohol consumption? And they do. And everybody, if you don't think you have a tremor, just hold a little piece of, you know, light paper on your hand, and you will see that everyone has a fine tremor. A little bit of a fine tremor. It's just the people with essential tremor.
Right now.
You just put a flat piece of paper on your hand. You'll see you have a little bit of a tremor. Everyone does. And that's why it's very, you know, those marksmen who excel in the Olympics, they are people who are very naturally endowed with virtually no tremor. Like American Sniper, that guy probably had like genetically zero tremor because he was a crack shot. So, you know, a lot of marksmen use stabilizers. They actually use gun mounts to get, you know, expert shots, because if you just hold a heavy rifle in your hands, your shake is going to create, you know, it's going to affect the bullet's path. So,
and they concentrate on their breath, to my understanding.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? But so with essential tremor, I got to say that I have not found a vitamin or nutrient that makes a big difference. One could say, gee, maybe magnesium could help a little bit. That's possible. Yeah. I think that stabilizing blood sugar is important because people do get shaky when they have low blood sugar. But it's not that amenable to nutritional treatment.
Yeah.
And the one nutrient that seems to impact it is not very good for you long term, which is a shot of Kentucky bourbon. And, you know, that may steady your hand for the gunfight at the OK Corral, or boost your courage anyway. But I'm not being facetious. That's actually the way that it can be diagnosed, because Parkinson's disease is not helped by alcohol intake, and essential tremor is somewhat. You know, this is such a profound problem that I've actually had colleagues in medical school who were in their 20s, and they wanted to become surgeons. It was their heart's desire to become surgeons. But when they began to assist in operations in the OR, they exhibited a hand tremor that was noticeable. And, you know, the supervising surgeon would just say, no, you know, that's no good. And they would have to revise their career plans and go into something different, like psychiatry, as a result of that. I've seen doctors change their career.
Would the advice be to get rid of all stimulants like caffeine?
No question.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think
mean,
that
surgeons don't normally drink caffeinated beverages.
Their surgeons do a lot of really bad stuff, let me tell you from the inside. Just worse than caffeinated beverages. I could tell you stories,
but
you know, that would undermine the confidence of Americans in the people that they go into the scalpel with.
Okay, let me just say neurosurgeons.
Yeah, that could be. Okay. Ben, we'll have to ask Ben Carson, a retired pediatric neurosurgeon, you know, what he did to have an excellent surgical career, because he seems to have done well. All right. So, yeah, it's a tough question. It comes up from time to time. I got to say, hey, you know, if someone is a health practitioner and you got an answer to essential tremor, send it. I want to hear about it. But I also, I don't want just anecdotal evidence. I'd like to know if there's scientific substantiation for it, because I'd really love to hear about it.
Okay.
And to mention the future of that, the maybe in brain implants. They have actually pinpointed areas of the brain that are associated with essential tremor. And they're ultimately, I think the treatment is going to be brain implants, either that or external electromagnetic focused treatment, you know, where you put on some sort of electromagnetic device around on your head, like a helmet or something like that, which will affect the brain centers that are associated with tremor.
Wow. Wow.
Or maybe some kind of operation that will zap out the part of the brain that's associated with tremor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We have, actually, it's not quite a question, it's a bit of a comment, but it may be a question.
Okay.
This comes from Naomi, who was plagued by severe urinary tract infections, was put on sulfa drugs, then she found D-mannos, mm-hmm. and lo and behold, it's cured.
Okay.
But she said another amazing thing happened.
Okay.
Besides getting rid of her UTI, when she flossed her teeth, she no longer had gum bleeding.
Interesting.
Yeah, she's had periodontal disease for many years,
right.
But when she started taking the D-mannos for the UTI, suddenly no more gum bleeding with flossing. You think it's related?
It's really interesting. I would say, well, that's just crazy coincidence. Let's talk about D-mannos, and what is D-mannos? D-mannos is it's a type of sugar, glucose mannose.
Good one.
But it's a sugar that adheres to receptors in the bladder, and it's kind of like provides sort of a Teflon, and you know, we know Teflon's unsafe, but a Teflon-like coating in the bladder that prevents the adherence of bacteria to the bladder wall. So in effect, the bacteria sort of float through the bladder and the urethra and have no docking place on the surface epithelium internally. So that's how that works. And it's mannose, we generally prescribe a half teaspoon two or three times daily. Often it helps for minor urinary tract infections. Mostly the effect is that it prevents urinary tract infections. If you have a severe infection, it might not work, but it's fabulous for preventing urinary tract infections. And I must give credit to my good colleague, Dr. Jonathan Wright, for bringing this to the fore, because he's a fantastic innovator and he's very, very ahead of the curve in identifying innovative therapies. And he introduced this to the natural products marketplace, and it's helped so many people. So I really owe him a debt of gratitude for turning me on to this. I think I've helped so many people, patients even who have severe bladder problems, like patients with multiple sclerosis who can't properly empty their bladders and always were getting infections. They take this stuff and it's great. So that's how that works. Now, it may be that it has the same effect in the mouth. Huh? That's interesting. And I've never heard this before, but it's plausible, because what are gum infections if not adherence of bacteria to your mucous membranes in your mouth?
Yeah.
And if you on the same principle that it prevents the adherence of bacteria to the wall of the bladder, it may prevent the adherence of pathogenic bacteria to the gums and the oral mucosa. So this is not completely far-fetched. I mean, you know, sometimes I say, well, you know, some people say, gee, I took this for something and something else got completely better. Thank you. I'd love to, whenever a miracle happens, I'd love to take credit for it. But I think that just might be a coincidence. In this case, it might not be.
Hmm. Wow. I wonder if the next person with periodontal disease who comes in, maybe we should try them on some D-mannos.
Well, we have something for that, and that is even more effective. I think it's xylitol. Xylitol.
Xylitol,
which is, you know, the clear that helps to prevent biofilms in the nasal passages, is present in spry gum, also made by the folks at Clear, X-L-E-A-R. You can get it at xlear.com, and they're one of our sponsors. They make a dental defense system called Spry, S-P-R-Y, and that's xylitol. And xylitol is similar. It's a sugar alcohol that prevents, that actually breaks up biofilms that are the cause of dental decay and periodontal disease. So by chewing spry gum, by rinsing with spry mouthwash, you can also prevent the adherence of bad bacteria to your teeth and your gums. Yeah. And so we do have something along those lines. Maybe D-mannose could be an additional measure that we could use in those patients. But, you know, we of course we have CoQ10 and vitamin C, and even some studies suggest folic acid helps prevent gum disease. There are a lot of things. Green tea, for sure, yeah. EGCG. You know, just drinking green tea is really wonderful. Mm-hmm. So those are some things we can do for periodontal disease. All right, this is a logical place at which to break as we divide these podcasts into two parts. So when we return, give us a preview of what we'll have in part two.
Okay, I'm on a low-carb diet, but suddenly I'm craving fat.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Ooh, craving. Oh, in other words, you gave up the sugar craving, and now it's become a fat craving.
Now craving high-fat food.
All right, that's a dilemma. We'll try to solve it in part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.